Welcome back to another episode of the Chats with Clark podcast. I'm your host, Joe Clark, and here at Chats with Clark, we don't do poppy intros. We get straight to the point. And the point of episode 47 is Doan Winkle. Doan, thanks for being here.
You got it. Happy to be here. Thank you.
So Doan is a professor at John Carroll, and to pull his background right from the site, it reads, and I quote, "Doan's passion is giving students a voice and motivating younger generations to tackle their dreams through creating their own careers. Before joining the John Carroll family, he was an assistant professor of entrepreneurship and associate director of the Means Center for Entrepreneurial Studies at Illinois State University." Agreed?
That's true.
Doan, in addition to your impressive resume, though, that, again, Carroll puts out there so graciously, I think that your LinkedIn bio is something that is very intriguing.
Yeah.
Because you close it with a quote that says, again, "one of the crazy ones."
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean?
Yeah, so goes back to Steve Jobs thing, an Apple thing, commercial I saw when I was a kid, and it just stuck with me the whole time. But I just look at it like somebody's got to be the one to share some big ideas and to be the first to jump off the cliff and take all the BS that comes with, trying to disrupt things. And so I don't mind being that person. I like it. And so I'm happy to lead the charge.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's just somebody has to. And it's hard in education to do that. There's a lot of risk.
Yeah. I think, right, you use the analogy of jumping off a cliff. So innately, it's like, what's holding you back? Are you going
right.
to live from this dive off of a cliff,
right.
too? So there's a lot of inherent risk in even the analogy you use.
Yeah. Well, or anytime you're trying to, anytime you have something that a system that's very traditional and has a lot of inertia, for people trying to break that up, you're going to get a lot of arrows slung at you.
Yeah. So how does that look in your day-to-day as a professor of entrepreneurship?
So now, 15 years in, it's a lot easier because, I have a reputation of how I do things and what I'm capable of and what I'm not capable of and things I don't do. So it's easier once you've built a reputation. But early on, it was not easy. It was pretty, a lot of stress and a lot of people coming at me with some negativity and warning me, don't do this, don't do that. I essentially got fired from my last job because it just wasn't a good fit culture-wise.
Yeah. And so you found a place here now that allows you to do it your way?
Yeah, it's been wonderful. Since I got here, my supervisors, the deans and everybody has basically said, look, do your thing. If you get in trouble, it's on you. If you need something, let me know. And just really been very gracious about giving me some latitude to experiment and try some things out, which is, again, pretty unique in education.
Yeah. So how does it differ here than it did at maybe some of the past places where you've worked? Different maybe the modus of teaching?
Yeah, it's a lot more flexible here. I find it to be a lot more flexible here that we can, at least in the entrepreneurship area, we can adapt and we can try this semester. It didn't work, tweak it, and be real flexible within, still got to have some guardrails up. But whereas previously where I was, it was just very much, this is what we've done for 10 years. This is what you do. Don't deviate from it.
Cogging the system, which is so not you, right?
No.
Yeah. So Doan, kind of to that end, how does one even teach entrepreneurship? How does that?
Yeah.
I think that's difficult, right?
Well, no. There's a lot of conversation around it, but there's two ways to my perspective. There's two ways to do it. One is startup. So how do you start and scale a business? Two is more kind of mindset, skill set approach. I think for the most part, outside of the Stanfords, MITs, these little bubbles where people really do start big things.
Sure.
I think it's dangerous to teach the startup mentality and approach outside of those communities because in education, as professors, we are almost disincentivized from giving constructive criticism to students because I'll generalize a lot here, but they don't necessarily like that. And because they don't like it, we don't get the best teaching evaluations, which is part of our reward structure.
Sure. Right?
So there's this sort of inherently baked in, be nice to kids, right? And so if kids are working on ideas, and I tell them that idea sucks, not in so many words, they don't like it, right? So what I do, in what a lot of people do in those types of programs is they're encouraging students to work on ideas that they know are bad.
Inherently. Yeah, yeah. Right.
And that's just, and the students don't know any better, right? And so they're setting students up for failure while encouraging them that it's a good thing. And I just think that's, A, is just disrespectful.
Yeah.
But B, I think it's
what
damaging.
What a waste of time.
Yeah. And but I think it's damaging to the student because here we are pumping them up, right? With this sort of false confidence that we know is false confidence.
Yeah, it's terrible. You leave in a classroom and you're going back to your colleague and saying, God, I got the worst idea possible, but you can't put that out there because you need your salary to go up too, and you want your pockets still stuffed, right? That's why you work.
And, you know, it's, I mean, it's not comfortable to give people constructive criticism.
Absolutely.
Right? So like if
it's a skill too.
Yeah, 100%. So, I mean, if I'm not really trained in that or comfortable doing that, even if the students are going to kind of take it well, I may not be as comfortable doing it.
Sure.
Right. So it's just, you know, it's this bad environment for the most part. So instead, what we do and the way I think entrepreneurship should be taught is more of a mindset skill set approach. So it's kind of here are the skills people use to start businesses. These are also the skills people use to be valuable employees. So we're going to teach you and have you practice those skills so that wherever you go in your career, you're going to be able to create and capture value for yourself or for somebody else.
I love it. Yeah. You know, I got to say the startup side almost has a business aspect to it because you're growing, scaling, whether it's economics, supply, demand, the whole nine yards that are tax. I mean, everything that's innate to a business as opposed to what you're talking about, the skill set that might make you beneficial anywhere you
go. Right.
So when you look at that skill set, what would you say are some of the top maybe three skills or traits that you try and have your students have?
Yeah. So the big one is customer interviewing. It's called a variety of different things, right? Customer development, discovery, customer interviewing. It's the process of saying, I have this idea, or, you know, like if you're working for somebody else, we've got this project, you know, we're launching this new product or whatever. And it's the idea of saying, who are the ideal customers for that thing? In other words, what group of people experience a pain that this thing solves drastic, you know, like a really drastic pain? So who are those people? Where do I find them? And how do I talk to them to get the information from them to make sure what I'm doing is actually something that solves a problem they have, right? So this is like a huge skill.
Absolutely.
Again, transferable. I mean, your job, your church or community organizations you're working in, whatever, right? So there's that one. There's storytelling. So not pitching, but actual storytelling. So how do you structure communication with somebody else so that you draw them in to what you're trying to do and you can ultimately get them to take whatever action you're trying to get them to take? That's another big one. And then just sort of being creative, right? So you know, if myself included, if anybody's, you know, comes up with like brand new ideas, they're really boring, just like crap ideas, right? That's just what we do off the top of our head because we go to the easy place. And so it's these skills of saying, okay, but how do you dig deeper than that? How do you really come up with something, you know, not unique, like we're just not going to come up with an idea that nobody's ever thought of before, but how do I find these innovative mix of, I'm going to take this and this and this and put them together, you know? So instead of just a Uber for lawn care or, you know, whatever, right? These kind of easy things like, okay, but let's dig deeper and find an actual interesting solution that's actually going to solve the problem for people who are experiencing it.
Yeah, there's a lot of value, right? Like you don't have to do the whole quote unquote reinvent the wheel, but it's just a matter of making it so that yours is that story that is told by whatever you're solving, whatever problem you're solving is more valuable than maybe whoever did it prior.
Right.
I think, I mean, you take a look at MySpace, right? Which no one uses. It doesn't mean that it wasn't innovative in its own. In its own
100% it was. Yeah.
And then now there's just not a place for it because other people have, dare I say, done it better, right? Like that's ultimately what
it is. I mean, that's the history of time, right? Is people come around and you improve on this and you improve on this and that's how things work. I mean, and that's how progress happens. And so that's why we here, and I'm a big advocate for focus on not teaching those skills, having students practice those skills so they can get to a level of mastery in those skills, because then they become a very attractive employee if that's the route they want to go, or they increase their chances of success as an entrepreneur trying to launch something.
I love it. Absolutely. Yeah. When you're marketable in many facets, and people want you on your team too, because you're not just a one trick pony.
Right. And I find that, I see that as my job. So I believe that whoever's paying for these young people's education, they're hiring this institution to get them a job, period.
Yeah.
And so my job as an employee of this institution is to do that, is to do everything I can to contribute to that goal. Right now, I take it a step further and say, I'd rather these kids spend their time and get paid to do something they love, right?
Sure.
Add some relationship to a purpose, but ultimately that's the goal, like for you to leave and have a job, not go back to, you know, your high school bedroom and house and whatever. So, and I think the way to do that is to give them the skills that is going to make them marketable.
Absolutely. You're going to constantly be thinking that, like, as the student, yeah, then you're constantly going to be thinking about how can I do this better?
Right.
And when you're transcendent like that, then of course the world's your oyster.
Yeah. And through some of these skills, you learn to be adaptable, right? So that you're not just, you've got to read situations and contexts and, you know, and then as you get more experience, you get better at it.
Don, when students come in and they're curious about areas to go into, what are your areas of recommendation?
So I don't have any. Okay. So I try to get to know the student and try to figure out, like, what is it you enjoy?
Just taps into the passion.
I don't care what it is. Yeah. Right? You like skateboarding or you like knitting or you like raising goats. I don't care, right? Like, there's something that each person enjoys doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I find for a lot of young people, they don't ever see that as career opportunity, right? All they think about is, I want to be a marketing major so I can do marketing stuff, or I want to be a political science major so I can do, you know, law stuff, or whatever they go into. And so I try to get to know young people and take a step back and be like, well, what are you interested in? And based on what you're interested in, let's figure out a career path that's going to allow you to do that stuff. Because they're never going to come up with something that somebody isn't getting paid to do already.
That's it. Yeah. It's just you have your own unique twist on it because you're you. And then when you use the uniqueness of you,
right,
combined with those really valuable traits and skills,
right,
all of a sudden you can do what you need to do for work, which is great.
100%.
And you're going to be that much more effective.
Yeah. I mean, you love what you like, you enjoy what you do. Mm-hmm. You're excited to show up every day and to put in extra because you really are enjoying it. And so you're just more effective and more valuable, you know, for a company you're trying to work for, or you're doing a better job of growing a good business.
Absolutely. Don, I would imagine that many students coming in are interested in tech to some degree. It's, of course, a field with a lot of opportunity and it's ever changing and ever growing. I mean, seamless, you know, needless to say, right?
Yeah.
With that, though, of course, is the major push towards AI in a lot of ways.
Yep.
How do you, I guess, feel about AI and what are your thoughts on where it's going to go from here?
Yeah, I love it. I spend hours every day messing around with it. And trying to figure out how to incorporate it into my life as a founder of an ed tech company, my life as a professor. It makes me a more efficient in what I do. And so then I can be more effective, mm-hmm, because I can take a lot of the low value tasks I have, you know, I have to do, and I can push most of that work off onto AI, right?
And yeah,
therefore, I can focus more on what I determine are high value tasks for me. Most part, it's time with students and face to face kind of things, right? So it can be massively disruptive, dangerous as well. But, you know, I think it's just going to continue to grow. I mean, it's been around for a long time, right? It's not like this just all got created in October or whatever, right? It's been around for a long time. So it's just going to continue to grow and continue to evolve, and people are going to figure out, how do I implement this in whatever I do, you know? And so it'll grow that way, and it'll become just like the internet or Excel or whatever. I mean, it's going to become a part of all of our lives and routines. So part of what we do is, you know, we're a liberal arts school, so we're not like this big tech hub, but part of what we do in the entrepreneurship program is, like, we're going to expose you to these things, and we're going to get you playing around with some of these things with some guidance, so that you start to develop a little bit of literacy in these, right? You don't have to become world expert in this stuff, but you have to be able to talk about it. You have to be able to at least show some basic understanding of how to use it.
Yeah, you can't fall behind.
Correct.
Right.
Yeah. So that's kind of the approach we take with doing it, but I think it's massive. I love it.
Yeah.
And it's really, you know, in education specifically, it's pretty... still pretty controversial, right? Should it be here? how do we use it? What do we let students do? Just all this stuff. And it's wonderful conversations. I think we got to have them and figure it out. But I'm just hoping people start pulling their head out of the sand. And
absolutely. As with anything, right? You can't just bury it and then ignore it as if it's not there. Because those are the people that just get passed way by.
And the flip side of it, and I find myself more in this camp, we also can't just like run without thinking.
Okay, yeah, to it.
That's what I naturally do, right? So it takes, you know, it takes both, right? And Absolutely. That's why I talk to a lot of people who are all in on it, but the conversations I enjoy more are the people who don't want it.
Okay.
Right? Yeah. Because I learned so much from, help me understand why you're so against it, right?
Sure.
It's like, get the opposite perspective, which helps me to learn and see things in a different perspective. And hopefully it's equally valuable for them when I share my perspective. So
100%.
I think all the conversations have to keep happening.
No doubt. For people that are listening, I had a conversation with my grandparents recently about this whole AI thing. And I described it much like a tool that is like a drill, right? So you use a drill, a carpenter would use a drill and not think twice about it, as opposed to just using a screwdriver.
Right.
Right. I think it's much like that to expedite those mindless or less important, I guess, tasks.
Right.
So you could focus on time with students. You could focus on getting the whole door in as opposed to just the little handle, right? Things like that.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, exactly. And it's problematic. It's biased. It's privacy issues. You know, there's all these things that come with it that need to be acknowledged and need to be strategically thought through and how you use it. But again, that's part of what we need to talk to young people about and help them understand. You know, there are things you have to be aware of and things you have to be cautious with.
Yeah.
Because if they go into the world where they have to use this and they don't understand, there are some of these things you got to really be aware of. You know, it could be damaging to them in their career path and in their job. And so, like, that's my job, is to help prepare them.
Absolutely. Don, how do you advise students who are worried that AI is going to take them out of the marketplace?
Yeah. So the way I phrase it is, AI is not going to take anybody's job. People who are better with AI will take your job.
Okay. I love it. Yeah. Because it's a tool.
Yeah.
So again, that's faster is going to get the job over the carpenter that's using the screwdriver.
Bingo. Right. So if you want to ignore it or you don't want to put your head in the sand or whatever, yeah, you're going to be replaced. Not by the technology, by somebody who knows how to use the technology.
Yeah. So again, it's another tool to learn, just like people that aren't typing, right? I mean, there's endless examples, I feel like.
Yeah. Right. You just like, you refuse to use the internet. Well, yeah. Good luck.
Right. 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 Fair enough. There's a great friend of ours who had finally just gotten a phone, or a family friend of ours, and like he was adamant against not needing a cell phone.
Yeah.
Sure enough, he caved and has one.
Yeah, good.
Not that he uses it.
Navigating the world as a BlackBerry now.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Don, I mentioned your LinkedIn bio earlier, and part of that is because of your notoriety, because I would say using LinkedIn and the conversations that you have there. For example, I was telling a friend of mine who's in the venture capitalist kind of entrepreneurial world, and he's like, oh, yeah, I know. He was asking about the pod, who was going to be on it. He's like, oh, yeah, I know Don. You know, he's a great guy, and he follows along on your LinkedIn. Talk to me about what you're doing on LinkedIn and what that platform is for you.
Yeah, it's just professional networking, ultimately, is what it is. But it's a way for me to share what I'm doing so that I can get feedback from a really diverse array of people. And it's a way for me to learn what other people are doing, to connect with them, either to collaborate on things, projects, whatever. And for me to do some consulting, work with other schools or other businesses or whatever. So, you know, professionally, it's a gold mine. And I mean, I've been traveling all over the world doing stuff with entrepreneurship education and AI, and it solely came from LinkedIn.
It's incredible.
It came from the reputation I built over 15 years, right?
Sure.
I didn't just like show up one day. But since I started posting so much and being pretty strategic with LinkedIn, just so many opportunities have come my way, right? Because people look at it and they go, okay, A, authentic, right? I'm not coming out of the gate trying to sell stuff and be sleazy. And B, developing some expertise in thought leadership.
When you're consistent for that long, people tend to think that you dabble with it for that long.
Yeah,
right? I mean,
there's
an innate, you've worked on it, you've been in the trenches and spent 15 years, quote unquote, perfecting your craft.
Right.
All of that.
Right. Yeah. So it takes time, right? It's a whole, like, you know, the entrepreneurs aren't successful overnight.
Yeah.
It's the same sort of thing, right? It's just trial and error. And I messed around with it for a while and put it away, came back, put it away, came back, and then finally realized, okay, here's a system. Here's how you really leverage that tool to achieve what I'm trying to achieve, which is building a community to get feedback on what I'm doing, to learn what others are doing, and then just to find gigs to get paid.
Okay. Yeah. So what are those? What does that look like for you?
Which one?
Gigs to get paid. what are you trying? I guess my question more specifically is like, what are you trying to find? Is that part of the traveling, and how does all that come to be?
Yeah, it's really just consulting. So mostly with more like educators and business deans and that kind of thing, right? To say, here's how you can integrate AI into what you're doing, teaching, working with students, all that kind of thing. So that's one thing. And then, you know, helping to reimagine and redesign entrepreneurship courses or programs or that. So that's really one. Some businesses reach out to me and it's okay, right? But that doesn't really light me up.
Yeah, I mean, you're in education for a reason, right? Working with students for a reason.
Right.
It's straight off the JCU bio. it's clearer than something that you've been thinking for a long time that you want to help people.
Yeah.
Help students particularly.
Yeah, 100%.
I think there's something to be said for that too, because students are coming from a place where this is what they're growing up learning too, as opposed to people who have already gone to school, learned, have been doing maybe the same thing for a long time.
Right.
Adults.
Yeah.
Push to try to say.
Some old people.
So there's a lot of innate value in that too.
Oh yeah. No, I mean, it's definitely a more enjoyable, exciting audience to mess around with. Most days.
There's
bumps in the road every now and then.
Oh, of course. and then again, it's, you get a 19-year-old coming up with an idea and you're like, okay, this idea is either really good or really terrible. Yeah, exactly. Because 19-year-olds don't have exposure enough to more often than not come up with a problem or find a problem and come up with a solution.
Right.
I get the bumps in the road thing. I can only imagine. I taught kindergartners, so I get it.
I hear you.
To a degree, right? did LinkedIn tap into your business? Tell us about your business. You said an ed tech business. How did you form that and what's your goal with it?
Yeah. So me and a couple guys came together, a mutual friend actually introduced two of us, and then we found the third guy on Upwork.
Okay.
So we built a digital curriculum. Where we started was we built a digital entrepreneurship curriculum for kind of teaching entrepreneurship in this different way, you know, that I talked about.
Yeah.
Very experiential. And then, you know, that's been used at 200-ish universities.
Great.
So far. And then now we're kind of branching out. We've developed a AI teaching assistant, you know, that can help develop lesson plans and syllabi, all these kind of things. And so again, we're trying to stay very relevant. We're trying to figure out and understand, here's what college entrepreneurship professors need, you know, the problems they experience, or solutions to those problems that are better than what's on the market.
All higher ed.
Yeah. Okay. At the moment. Okay. Right. I mean, it's K-12 is a bit different ball.
100%. Yeah.
Especially when it comes to pricing models. That's a little different rabbit hole, but and it's a market I understand. Right. So
yeah, you know it. The regulations in K-12 are so different too.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, with all the stuff we're doing, I mean, AI is baked into everything we do. We use it to adjust and ideate and refine things we do. So, you know, we like to roll out of what we're encouraging teachers to do for their students, right?
Sure.
So we're saying like, hey, here's this process we're telling you is the right process to use to teach entrepreneurship. So we actually live that process.
Absolutely. It's rolling up the sleeves, right? It's practice what you preach. It's the whole,
right.
Everyone needs that.
Yeah. And I just think a lot of people don't do that. And
yeah,
whatever works for them or doesn't, I don't know. But for us, we just felt like we need to be authentic in what we're preaching, and be able to live that and share it with people.
So that's like it's almost like a consulting business, really, what you have too.
Yeah, well,
to a degree, if you're
I'd say more, not necessarily consulting, because you know it's a product, right?
Yeah.
So it's like a textbook or whatever. So I'd say it's more of an ed tech business.
Great. What's it called, Dom?
So the curriculum is the Experiential Entrepreneurship Curriculum. Exact. Is what we've narrowed it down to.
Yeah.
And so teachingentrepreneurship.org is a website to go to. It's a blog. We got tons of free resources. And then, you know, that's part of our funnel to get to the curriculum.
100%. Yeah. Everyone check it out in the cliff note, right? In the notes below.
Yeah.
Don, just going to tangent for you a little bit here too. A shirt that I know you wear often is one that just says redraw the boundaries.
Yep.
It kind of tags into what you were talking about in the beginning of our episode here.
Yeah.
Tell me about that. What is re and re in parentheses draw the boundaries?
Yeah. So it's got, so the re in parentheses is critical, right? And so part of how we approach teaching and mentoring and guiding here is you have to have boundaries, right? So you have to focus. There has to be some focus that you have within some boundaries. And so what we want to do is work with young people and say, okay, what are the boundaries? In other words, what are the things that you're really passionate about and interested in that kind of light you up?
Yeah.
Let's keep you within those boundaries and get you focused on that. So when the opportunities come your way to, should I take this minor? Should I join this club? Should I go to this event? Whatever, you know, tons and tons of stuff are coming at students all the time, opportunities, right? And then they just have such a hard time evaluating, you know, is this really valuable? Should I really spend 3 hours of my time at this event or, you know, invest all this time in this minor or whatever? So if we can figure out, like, here's what your boundaries are, basically, here's the purpose you're trying to shoot to, and then use that as sort of a decision tree of saying, okay, here's this opportunity, but does it really help advance this? And if the answer is no, then don't do it. And if the answer is yes, well, then dive in, right? Mm-hmm. And so a lot of young people don't have those. So that's where the draw your boundaries come in. But then even there are some, you know, who do have those, they know, like, I want to be a human rights lawyer. They've always wanted to do it. It's what they're going to do, right? So now we can just take that and go, okay, let's redraw those a little bit to narrow it and think of different ways that you can set yourself apart in that journey.
Great. So it's almost like you're refining the vision.
Yeah.
To a point where it gets so focused that you can do it.
Yep.
And let stuff come in and bolster it.
Yeah.
And kind of ignore the rest.
Yeah. And it's taking an entrepreneurial approach because it's, you know, and let's use an example. If somebody says, I want to be this human rights lawyer, whereas lots of people who want to be human rights lawyers, and you have to do certain things to get there, obviously. But there's different ways to do it. There's different, you know, unique kind of innovative ways to move in that journey. And that's part of that redrawing it, is to say, how can you be different? How can you do some things that set yourself apart in a good way? You know, it makes you more attractive to potential law firms or organizations that might hire you or whatever. So that's that kind of redrawing part.
Although I think it's so essential, because otherwise we're all just, this is our experience. It's just very bland, right? It's all test scores and it's very bland until you add those personal experiences, almost the anecdotal pieces of who you are, and letting that employer or potential employer or whatever see kind of the parts of you that make you want to do that.
Right.
I always pitch this podcast as really what I like to focus on is kind of the why behind what we do, because what we actually do, if it's synonymous for us and another person, is more surface level than the rationale behind why we do that thing.
Right.
So whatever we're doing is motivated by certain factors that are intrinsically more valuable and interesting than whatever the thing itself is that we're doing.
Yeah, 100%. You just got to dig beneath the surface and figure that piece out, and then that'll help you make decisions of how you want to spend the resources you have, you know, time, money, social capital, all that stuff.
Don, it's very cyclical. The process is like, it all kind of ties together, right? You're walking the walk and doing it yourself. You started a business that's successful. So you come from a place of having done it.
Yep.
First of all, when teaching, you come from a
place. And also not done it.
Okay. So you've had
lots of failures. Yeah. Which is critical, I think.
Yeah.
Like you gotta have both so that you can speak to and relate to both.
Absolutely. Give us a story real quick, Don. I feel like it's a perfect nod for it. Give us a failure story that you've learned from.
Yeah. The biggest one I learned from, it really had to do with culture.
Okay.
And so good idea. We did the homework. We did the research to figure out this was actually going to be, you know, there's a good problem here. There's crappy solutions. This is good. It leverages tech, all these kind of things, you know. So we had investors on board and all kinds of things. And then the culture between some of us, the founders and some other employees and other investors that came in, the culture just took a left turn. And, you know, it's what the majority wanted, which is, so that's fine. But for me, it just was way, way out of line with kind of my values and the way I see the world and belief systems and all that. And so I stepped out, you know, and I'm like, look, I'm not going to fight it. You know, it's obviously where things are going. And so it just isn't good for me. So, you know, that was, but I didn't realize it for a long time, you know, and so I really struggled with it. So for me, it was kind of a failure in a way, because I didn't get to see it to fruition. I didn't get to kind of like continue on the ride. And then other ones, it's just, you know, dumb ideas, right? My wife and I were in Colorado. And we were like, oh, we're going to start a blueberry farm because we grew up in the Midwest picking berries, right? We're like, there's no blueberry farms. There's some berry picking farms out here in Colorado. So we're going to start one. And after a lot of research, we figured out there's a reason there's not blueberry farms in Colorado, yeah. Right? It's just that doesn't work.
Sure.
You know, so that was another, that was do some basic research before you really dive into things.
Yeah.
And if something doesn't exist, it's because smarter people with more resources figured out it's a bad idea.
Yeah, I don't even know, but I'm just guessing for the same reason you don't have palm trees here and can't grow palm trees that you probably can't do the blueberry farm out there.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, if you really wanted to, I'm sure you could, but sure. You gotta like create this whole different ecosystem. Yeah. So, you know, blueberries don't grow in the desert. That's essentially what's out there.
Yeah. No doubt. Red Rocks off. It's cool.
Yeah, right.
When students come to you and are discouraged and have that feeling that they're not going to get there, what's your piece of advice to them?
Yeah. Usually I try to get them just to take a step back, right? Because I think so many times, and same for me, anybody, like you get so lost in the moment and what's going on right now. And, you know, it can be really painful and stressful and anxious and all these kind of things because there's this turmoil of, I'm not succeeding in whatever I'm doing. I'm not enjoying whatever I'm doing, you know, all these things. And they just kind of build on each other, right? Sure. So most of the times I'm like, all right, look, let's just take a step back. Why are you here? What are you doing here? Right? You're here. You're going to have this job afterwards. Da, 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 da. Let's focus on, again, sort of what's that purpose and what are you trying to do here? Right? And so it's almost like recentering them on their purpose or their why. And then, you know, the tumultuousness is going to come and it's just going to be a cycle. But hopefully if I can give them a little bit of a skill around, okay, when that feeling starts to build up, just take a breath, take a step back, remind yourself why you're doing what you're doing. Just dig back in.
Don, how important is it then to stick to your values? In your story, you had to bow out of a situation that seemingly could have been fruitful because of your values.
Yep.
In a situation where students are coming to you that are down and feeling down and out, frankly,
yep.
You again tell them to take a step back and really essentially look at their values.
Mm-hmm.
How do you go about that in a world that maybe has ever-changing values?
Well, I mean, just because the worlds do. Doesn't mean yours do, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm 50, so sometimes I forget what it's like to be 19 or 20, right? And who I was when I was 19 or 20, but I don't know if I would say at 19 or 20, my values were all set in stone either,
sure.
Right? I was exploring and different experiences pop up and all that kind of thing. But, you know, I mean, at the core, I think people have values, whether they're good or bad,
right?
They're what they are based on how you were raised and all these kind of things. So, you know, so I just think it's stepping back into that and saying, regardless of what's going on in the world, you know, if part of what I'm, you know, part of how I see things is I need to have, you know, healing relationships. I need to contribute to my community. I need to make a lot of money, you know, whatever sort of drives me, I just got to lean into that, especially when other things are kind of going south and that I'm not enjoying things. Like the more I can get into whatever those values or whatever that why is, happier I'm going to be.
Yeah. So Tom Brady was on Patrick Bet-David's, he was actually at a conference with Patrick Bet-David maybe 2 years ago. It was after Tom had retired.
Mm.
And Tom was talking about his success that he had, obviously over such a long career. And Patrick, it really never came from him coming from a place of privilege, say like a guy like Kevin Durant in the sense of like, Durant's just an athletic, or like a LeBron, who's an athletic specimen. Like that was not Tom Brady's.
Right.
He was the backup and had to fight his way through no matter what.
I don't think anybody's ever called him an athletic specimen.
Exactly. Yeah. There's nothing about, right? You say the brain. But so what he talks about, though, is like on those days where it's like when he was in college and they were going in the quarterback battle every single week, he was like, okay, I just balled out and we won this game, but I guess we're doing it again next week. And he had to remind himself and put himself in that place of the grit almost of all the work that he's put in to get there.
Yep.
I think that's such a valuable thing to teach students. Anyone, when you have to tap into, and in this case, especially in an entrepreneurial sense, like if you like what you're doing, you have to tap into that and keep going with it.
Yeah.
Because that grit can get you something.
Yeah. And I, Like, I think whoever students want to look at and sort of idolize for success, you know,
yeah,
business people or sports people or music people, whatever, right?
It's like an operation of men into
it. Yeah, hopefully they're yeah. But it's always reminding them to say, you know, the person you see on stage today, the person you see on the cover of Forbes today, like that didn't happen overnight. That didn't, right. You know, and do some research and pay attention to the journey they had to get there, right? Where it took them 27 years to have that hit, or it took them until they were 45 to, you know, launch that huge company. And so that's always a part of what I do is there's nothing wrong with idolizing or looking up to or aspiring to that kind of a thing, but like, don't think that comes quickly or easily at all.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's, you know, it's the Kobe Bryant thing of he's addicted. I mean, you're addicted to your craft, right? Mm-hmm. And you just put in more work than anybody and you don't play around with it. And some people that works, right? Tom Brady, whatever. But I think a lot of times young people don't really understand that.
No, it's hard, right? Or like you get a guy like Goggins who's like a nut in his own right, but just like, just keep going, right? Like, holy cow. Like some of that's like really hard to, I think, even wrap your head around.
Yeah.
Especially at that young age.
Yeah.
I don't know for sure. Don, when you look at your life, I think that one of the main qualities and traits that leads to a happy life and people who practice this are more happy than those who do not is gratitude.
Yeah.
My question simply to you, Don, is what role does gratitude play in your life?
It's huge. I mean, it took me a while to figure this out, right? And I don't get to where I get to without a lot of other people contributing to that in any variety of ways. And so as I got older, especially as I had kid, shifts your perspective considerably. I understood the value of gratitude a lot more and appreciating the people that were willing to contribute to my journey with any number of resources and then letting them know, right? There's one thing to feel it. It's another thing to express it. And expressing it's not easy, but it feels good to do it and it feels good to receive it, right? So I get a lot of gratitude from students. I love it. I mean, I've got a drawer full of notes and cards and other things, just simple. Some of them simple, some of them pretty lengthy. But, you know, just expressing gratitude for taking the time or, you know, whatever happened in the relationship I've had with them. So, it's huge.
It is. It's so important. Showing it, you're spot on, is just immensely beneficial.
Yeah.
For the giver and the receiver.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I think every teacher knows that when they had, because I was the same thing. Like, I bunch of notes in my drawer to some students who showed grace, essentially.
Right.
And are appreciative of the time and the commitment that you put into them.
Right.
And their classmates.
Yep. Exactly.
On the flip side of it, Don, I think there's this notion of regrets being maybe a bad thing, but do you have any regrets in your life? And if so, how did you, I guess, recover, I don't know a better word, grow from them?
Yeah. So I try not to live with regrets. I am who I am. My experience got me here, all that kind of stuff.
But absolutely.
The one regret I have is lying to my wife. That's not a good idea. You know, and took a long time to work through that, you know, and square that up, which probably doesn't ever happen. But anyway, that's the one regret, right? And just, again, it comes down to sort of authenticity and having sort of this other perspective and thinking about how do your actions impact others that ultimately come back to you, right? So everybody has them.
Yeah.
That's kind of my big one. But other than that, I just go, look, some things I did weren't the greatest, weren't the brightest, had some damage to me or other people, whatever, but it is what it is and it got me where I am today.
Yeah, you learn things from whatever the experience is, both good and bad. I think sometimes the ones that sting really last, like you're, it doesn't sound like you're going around lying to your wife again. So clearly it burned enough, right? And it's caused you to think that way. I do have to ask just out of curiosity, and stop me if you wish. Did you have the change of heart on your own and then decided, okay, I need to come clean and come forward with this to your wife?
No.
Or was it you're caught red-handed with whatever the case may be. And then it's like, okay. And then the atonement comes in.
Yeah. No, it's I'm very narcissistic and have things about the person that I am and my personality that I have to get caught.
And so how does that influence you, right? Like, how does that influence you in the day-to-day? Because where's the, as an entrepreneur, you have to have some of that because you need to keep going. But also there's this reflectiveness that's really necessary, I feel like, to take criticism, constructive criticism, or critique yourself.
Yeah, it's difficult. Just, again, our narcissists aren't very good at that, generally speaking. So,
you're the idea guy.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, it takes a lot of practice. It takes some pain, right? Part of my experience at university, as I previously had a lot of sting, and, you know, a lot of it was on me and choices I made. And so that taught me a lot and caused me to kind of reflect with my wife's help around what happened there, right? And now this new position, how do I improve as a member of the community, and how do I set myself up for success instead of another failure, that kind of a thing. So, you know, I think we learn from experience. I think we can't do that reflection and can't do that growth as well on our own as we can with somebody else who's willing to be honest with us. And somebody else who cares about us that's willing to be honest with us. You know, I think having that other person or other people with us along that journey just makes the huge difference.
Yeah. And that's what love is at its core, is like thinking and realizing the best that someone can be and helping or joining in on that aspiration to become that person. I think that's ultimately what love is, because we all know we're never going to get to that quote unquote best of whatever we could be. It's just a goal that we're always going to strive for and keep pushing and pushing. Because if you get to a certain point, you're going to push it back.
Yep.
And it's that Matthew McConaughey Mind Your Own speech that he gave, right?
Yeah.
That whole
good one.
Very good. It's that whole idea. So to have someone like your wife who's willing to dive in with you, I think is immensely, I mean, it's the most, probably the most valuable thing. Yeah. You need that in your corner.
Yeah, especially don't lie to that person.
Yeah, true enough, right?
If you're going to break trust with anybody, not that person. Word of advice.
Yeah, relationships are important. Like,
a little bit.
I just don't know how people do it alone, right? You can't. I think you need good friends. Yeah. You need good people in your corner. For a lot of people, it's their family. For those that it's not, you still need good people in your corner, whatever that family is that you then choose. You have to. Humans need that relationship.
Yeah, you got to have a connection. And I mean, we're social. Everything's social.
That's it.
So,
Don, as we kind of wind down here, do you have any advice or any piece of wisdom that you'd like to share with a specific audience or the whole audience abroad?
Yes. So, September 12th at 8 p.m. When you make a mistake, own the mistake. So, be accountable. I'm sorry. Here's what I did wrong. Here's what I'm going to do better next time, et cetera. And don't give them flowers, candies, stuffed teddy bears, whatever, to say you're sorry, right? Keep those two things separate. You have to take accountability for what you did wrong. And then you have to let the gifts be enjoyable gifts. So if I give flowers to my wife every time I screw up, the flowers now have this negative meaning. And so it just damages the sort of beauty and the following and the excitement of nice gestures.
Absolutely.
Is it taints them with,
why am I getting
what'd you do now? Like what happened now? You know, it's not easy. I mean, it's not easy to be accountable for things you did wrong. That's why people try and soften the blow with a gift, right?
Yeah. Natural masking.
Like, yeah. 100%, right? It makes total sense. But I think doing the hard work of being accountable and keeping the good things as good things makes a difference, right? And so that's the awesome people that you want to share good things with, they can appreciate them for being the good thing.
Yeah, and then you just thought of them, right? It has inherently great value.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. I think that's really great advice. It's going to be clipped. If you are coming here from the clip, thanks for watching. If not, make sure you follow us on all socials and you're going to see the clip, because that's such great advice.
Yeah.
We muddy the waters when we don't need to. And part of that, I think, is a little bit of the fear that comes from just owning whatever.
Oh, 100%. Might be. No, it's not natural, right? I mean, it's not a good feeling to have to be accountable and own up to things.
I think part of that is the inherent, keep using the word inherent, but it's so applicable, my goodness, it's innate that when you have to take accountability for something, there's change that you're feeling, and that friction is something we all know. It's the age old, no one likes to change, no one likes change. And it's because there's friction. It forces us with the question of, okay, am I going to go and better myself now because of whatever this thing might be? Or am I going to ignore and put my head in the sand and just let it be in that stagnation? So when we're taking accountability for something, we're admitting to whatever degree it wasn't as good as it could have been, which implies that there's a growth and a change, that friction that needs to happen.
Right.
So if you don't take accountability in the first place, then there's no change it needs, right? It's like,
Well, and it just never, it's never going to work.
Yeah, it doesn't matter, to be honest,
Eventually it catches up to you, so.
Right, because you're just burying your head and saying, That's really wonderful advice. Don, any closing thoughts here? Are we ending on that?
I think that's a pretty good place to end.
That is, I know, that's the best. I truly think that's one of the best piece of advice that has been given on Chats with Clark. So, Don, I can't thank you enough for being on episode 47. Absolutely. It's a real pleasure. For everyone that's listening, we'll have Don's LinkedIn, again, his business, all in the description below. If you're on YouTube, you might be finding it in the pinned comment I'll direct you. Or if you're on the podcast, you'll see it in the podcast episode notes. Again, I'm your host, Joe Clark, signing off with episode 47. Please subscribe if you haven't already. Hit that like button, share it with someone who needs to hear this. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.